Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My special guest tonight, it's always a pleasure to have him on, is Stephen Dorado, legendary photographer, teacher, and we're going to be talking about a show of his, a blockbuster show coming up at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and the show's called Better Together, Four Decades of Photographs. Stephen, this is a biggie.
Mark, it is an honor to be with you for a decade.
I know.
You were there day one. You actually, in many ways, represent this show. You have really viewed pretty much every aspect that's on those walls at the Fitchburg Art Museum.
Well, first of all, I love your photography. And to see this, see the big scope of it, really, I had all sorts of questions. Virtually every major series that you've done in your life, and you've done quite a few, is represented in this show.
You know, Nick Capasso, who is a dear friend and the curator, and, of course, the director of the Fitchburg Art Museum, like you, has known me for decades.
I know. Good old Nick. I love Nick.
Yeah. Oh, who doesn't?
I know.
So he's the first to one of the first to recognize my work and carry through my career and give me many shows, both at Fitchburg and we used to work at the Cordova. And so he's the one that approached me about 2 years ago and from the corner of his face, you know, kind of shy about the whole thing, said, would you do a retrospect with us? And of course I jumped on
that. Oh, my God.
I mean, how could not? And so we spent 2 years culling through very, precision. You know, how do you deal with, you know, 30,000 photos from the
Well, that was my next question, man. I mean, you have a library of photographs. So first of all, did you both do a final cut?
He asked me to bring down the 30,000 to a couple.
No. Okay.
I'm not. I mean, that's all I do. I can't tie my shoes, but I make photos, right? I work on these series. I navigate through life making my art.
So was it tough getting that final cut?
You know, of course, I even have it down to my seven favorites in my lifetime that I feel I'll be remembered for.
Oh, whoa.
But, you know, because that's all I do day after day. I'm in my archives and I'm adding to my archives. And so I, you know, it's just, that's it. That's what's in my brain matter. So I narrowed it down and then he took it and strategically went through that. And boy, you know, just amazing how he figured out how to get four images from Belpont from 100 or 36. Mall photo down to four. Really, it was like stock. And he was so sweet in how he came to that conclusion with each body of work. There is one aspect of the show or series called Across the Table, which, Mark, you know because you're a Facebook friend and you've been seeing me post
Which
the platform of Facebook as a way to get that work out there. But it actually is the art. And so Nick looked at my Across the Table photographs, which, again, materialize on Facebook periodically. And he's going to project them about 40 feet big.
Holy God.
And he said to me, this is the only thing that was different. He said to me, Stephen, I want number one to the last ones you make in December of 2024. And it came out to be 1,001. So there's going to be 1,001 projected, 40 feet big, and each one is marked by the people in the photo,
right,
the location, and the date. And that's part of the art. And so I am so excited. They're going to be up for about 12 seconds each to fade to the next. You'll be watching a movie theater. That's what it feels like with these things huge. And it's all around food. It's all around people coming together. And I can do a whole show just on that, but I'll stop right there.
When was the first time you took that, your first Across the Table? First of all, that I think for the general public, that might be your best-known series because, as you said, you put it down Facebook. And it's such an unusual series. It's about several people. Usually you're not in the photograph. It's really interesting because it's one of these what I call like novel writing photographs because the viewer fills in an awful lot of story behind each photograph, if you know what I mean. You just imagine what's going on.
No, we did a complete analysis what this work is all about, and time is what filled in all those questions. So it started in 2013, and I'm going to try to cut through this quick, is that I got a Guggenheim back in 2013, so all of a sudden I have all this money. I knew I had money. What is my wife is like, you know, what are you going to do with all this, you know, tens of thousands of dollars? I said, well, I'm going to buy duct tape and, you know, film and paper for the duct tape to keep my camera working. And she, you know, hits me on the side of the head and says, will you buy something new for once and something different? So it's like, fine, I'll buy the new technology.
Whoa.
I'll buy a digital camera, these subcompacts, very small. I don't know why I'm doing it. I probably never use it. But then, like, a couple weeks later, this is actually just total setup here. My wife said to me, you know, every time we go out for coffee or dinner, you always have Mark Lynch with you, Nick Capasso with you, 20 of his students. I said, well, they all love you. They all know. No, I just want to have dinner with you, and we never do it. I said, I'll bring my little tiny camera, Donna, and I will take a picture of you from across the table. I'll give you the camera. You take a picture of me, and on my computer, I'll just slap them together side by side for the date, and I'll prove to you in a couple of months, with, as they accumulate, that we actually do have dinner together. So sure, we did it. And over a couple of weeks, we actually do have dinner together at, you know, in-house coffee or Coral Seafood that used to exist, things like that. And then I pulled her over, took her some time out for her to look at my computer screen and said, honey, even when we have dinner together, we choose not to photograph us looking at each other. I'm looking at the menu and you're looking at the waiter. I said, we are so middle-aged, it's pathetic. And then there was this moment of like, oh my God, the power of the camera in the hands of somebody else pointing back at me or at the table, there's a project here. So out of that, I started photographing all my friends, students, people that I meet that want to have coffee with me. And I'm like, it's so in your face, Mark. You don't know I'm making art right then and there, or you are collaborating. And I can't tell you how many times people say, so, hey, Stephen, what kind of art are you making right now? And this is over coffee, right, with the camera. I said, well, I'm actually making art right now. And they're like, no, I mean, what are you doing? And no, I'm really true. And they can't get it in their heads that actually is art.
Oh, yeah.
It's redefining it for every – it's opposite part of my brain matter that works with that as opposed to working with the 8x10 view camera, single sheets of film, which takes me days to figure out what's the photo – the quintessential photo that I'm going to make about that person in that place. This is – I'll shoot 200 photos within an hour. You will grab the camera, and you're having a ball, by the way, shooting 200 around the table. And then in editing, I become the boss. Even though I might have not made a single photo around that table, I'm the one that goes to hundreds of photos, and I do this every night before I go to bed. Almost every single day I shoot these things.
Okay, I got a load of questions I got to ask you.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, switching to digital.
Yeah.
Your other camera was like a second body of Stephen Dorado. It was a presence. It was a presence. This one is a much more sort of not in your face piece of equipment. How did you feel about that technology, adopting that?
You know, I also make movies, which is
a yeah, oh, yeah.
So it's different parts of the brain function working in movies and making stills with the 8x10 camera and making photos fluently with the digital. And it's not, they're not connected. Working with the digital reminded me closer to making movies.
Yeah.
Because it's a multitude of images that will eventually be edited. I like to call them the reverse shot that you see the B-roll in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first, back in 2013, it was all accounted for. Who is across the table? I mean, Mark, I have one of you in your studio years ago.
I saw that. You sent me that. I don't even remember that.
No, but that's the thing is that, no, this is so incidental that I don't look through the viewer most of the time.
Right.
It's a
walk-in.
Right. And I'm talking to you, and I'm shooting from over my shoulder, pointing at you, knowing how it pre-focuses, knowing the perimeters of the lens. You know, you work with something so often as I do, is that it is invisible. It becomes notable when somebody picks it up and you see them smile when they look at the shot, and they're discovering something unto themselves. When I hold it, it's another part, again, of my brain. It's like walking. It just does it. The 8x10 I still use. Let's not dismiss that. That's right here, right next to me in my office as I speak. And that camera I don't use every day. I used to use it almost every day. I use it very strategic for very specific projects. It always was, but now the projects have kind of, since COVID, the world changed. There's been a shift on the axis of the world. And I work on very specific ideas and very strategic with the 8x10. When I make movies, movies are almost just like, it just happens. Movies just, I start making little films with these cheap digital cameras. And over a couple of weeks of filming something, like, oh, I think I'm actually working on a film.
Are any of your films going to be shown in this exhibition?
We have, I have the whole top floor of the museum, room after room. And there's one room devoted to With Dad, which was a PBS
oh,
special.
Oh, God. That was, that is, Stephen, that's, that series still affects me.
I still have people literally on the street that I've had this happen, pull over, walking down Shrewsbury Street, and give me a big hug to mention that film. Just blew my mind.
You have to explain it for people who don't aren't familiar with your work.
So I'm the show is better together. I love people. I'm a hopeless romantic, and I'm always connected to people. I adore them. My past projects started Belle Pond here in Worcester, entering into a community I had no business being part of. But I asked people.
Okay, but I'm talking about With Dad. I want you to explain that series.
Bringing it right up to that. So just to segue right into With Dad is that my father, a mentor in my life, who is an artist, had some signs of some depression in his late 50s. Nice. I asked him, in short, if I could make appointments. And he's like, why are you making appointments to photograph me? You've been doing it. No. I have a fear in me that you are me 30 years from now.
Yeah.
And all our of, you know, ebb and flow with emotions. And Dad, I think you have points of depression and I want to see it through my camera. So I started photographing him over the first couple of years and I noticed he was getting worse. And then he had a stroke and we realized he had Alzheimer's. And I was my father's son. I'm a soldier. He taught me to be the best artist I can. And I asked him permission if I can continue photographing him. And again, he was cognizant and lucid and said yes. And then I carried this right through to the last years of his life in a nursing home. 5 years, which, by the way, is a record, according to all the nurses. Most people expire after about a year and a half to two at best. But Gene Dorado, my father, stuck around 5 years. And as one nurse said to me, so his son can make great art, which just blows my mind. So I have 3,000-plus photos of Gene, my father, different stages of Alzheimer's, and also the different responsibilities that family took upon ourselves, my brother, my sister, and my mother and cousins, and you get all of that in these photos shot with that big, enormous camera, but also films were being shot during that period by my brother as well. So it became a PBS special directed by Soren Sorensen. He did the editing. He's the one who came up with the idea. There's also an amazing book published by Davis right here in Worcester. And so you can get the book. It's not, look, it's a difficult subject. It really is.
Okay, we're back. Stephen, you talked about the Celestial series. Jump, we were talking about the visual quality of the Martha's Vineyard. So you always shot those at a certain time of the day to get that sort of lighting?
Yes. I shot Jump during the time of my father very ill with Alzheimer's. And it was a way to escape the intensity of being in a nursing home. And I was interested in this particular bridge, which is they nicknamed the Jaws Bridge.
That's right. That's right.
You see the shark underneath the bridge and eat that kid and his leg. So that's it. So it's always, in the back of my mind, very humored by that, a little bit of a chuckle. But I was interested in, I thought when I first started shooting the bridge, I didn't use my camera on tripod. I actually got a grant and I bought this handheld camera and I mounted a flash on it, and I would then walk in. I would ask permission from everybody. Hi, my name is Steven and I'm working on this project about people in motion jumping. And if some kid was underage, I'd ask the parents. And if it was somebody 18 and older, hey, can I just be invisible here? And I got to know I got to know everybody. It became part of the bridge. And I was interested in that moment of levitation. I was interested in that moment of letting go. And I didn't know why at first, but I just somehow was right. And so I would lock onto the person breathing. They're, they might be standing on the banister, the railing. And then the moment that they make that commitment, I just fire off with this camera, and the flash gives it that silvery quality. And I shot from 12 noon to 2, the worst possible light of day. And I did that because I wanted to just be alone. I didn't want to be with other photographers later in the day, you know, with the beautiful light that you get, and just make them line drawings. Later on, I realized I was letting go of my father. That's where death was taking place.
Oh, wow.
Many different forms and different ways.
Yeah.
Some people go willingly. Some of them go with people helping them. Some stumble and fall, literally fall off the bridge as they're preparing. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is every possible exit from this earth I'm experiencing over and over and over. So it became a study that went from the year 2000 to 2006. I think it's August 24th I made my last photo. Weirdly enough, I know the dates of the last photos I make of projects. I don't know the first ones because I'm not half the time aware that I'm actually starting a project. But I know when one ends or goes through a major metamorphosis into something else. So there you go about the Jump series. And there are four – oh, and there's a film. We forgot it. So there's a short film. It's not that long. It's 21 minutes that I went back to the bridge making movies of just feet up close on the railings and hands and nervousness and flirtation. And Matt Malsky, professor at Clark University in music, collaborated with me and wrote this incredible score. So that's going to be in the show as well.
Jeez. Now, talk. You know, we didn't talk about Jacob's house. Who was Jacob?
So Jacob Knight was an artist here in the state of Massachusetts, a true eccentric. I think if you look up Porter, you'll see in the dictionary Jacob Knight. He lived in West Brookfield and owned 30 acres of land. And he also had the keys to the dump of the Brookfields, West Brookfield, North Brookfield, and so on. And every other day he'd go to the dump and bring back these kind of artifacts, these like a little bit of history of people's discards. And I friended him in 87. I was going through a burnout period. I just finished documenting 2.5 years of a mall with the Galleria for a show. And I was looking for a place to go hide from people, hide from the world. And Jacob living out there in the woods, Wigwam Road.
I know where that is. I know where that is.
Yeah. And, you know, when I showed up one day, I, you know, huge respect for this guy. And I just said, hey, Jay, can I go in your backyard and make a photo? And he's like, yeah, sure, fine. And I went home that night, developed a negative. I said, this is the worst photo I've ever made in my entire life. I am so excited. This is great. There's no place to go other than up. So I went back to Jake's the following week and said, Jake, can I live here part-time for as long as it takes for me to learn how to make still lifes? And, you know, Jake slept by day. Literally, he would get up 3 or 4 in the afternoon. He says, yeah, just don't disturb me. Here's the key to my house. And go to town. And then for the next year, it was my poor man's therapy. Wow. So I would go out to Jake's late afternoon after teaching, weekends, summer breaks, winter breaks. I worked with snow in my still lives, and I shot a couple hundred of still lives that would take days to construct. That's a whole, again, all the thing I'm talking about is just scratching the surface. But they were not well received when I had a show of them in 1988. Nobody really understood them. So they just had kind of a brief little glimpse into the world, and then they were just collecting dust here in boxes for decades to come. And it was Nick Capasso to dig them out and said, no, they're important. They're essential to show the foundation of where you're going when you arrived at Martha's Vineyard.
That's right.
In 1988 and onward.
It's so different from your other photographs. First of all, there's no people. The other thing is, they're aesthetic in a totally different way.
They're constructs.
Yeah.
I always thought of them as an incision into my brain matter.
Huh.
And so what you get is a nonlinear history. Oh, there's Catholicism in there. There is a cult in there. There are fun narratives in there. There is enough guilt to go around when you look at them closely and you pull them apart. They're really actually very funny. They really are. It might be like an old doll that I found, a Raggedy Ann doll, or a shoe.
They have that quality.
And you got that patina, right?
Yeah.
And these are very primitive. You know, I set up a little studio in Jake's barn. The bats watch me work, kid you not. And I would use mirrors, and I would use aluminum foil to illuminate them. He literally had dark barn doors. Barn doors is a term in photography where you control light through the maneuvering of these kind of big wings.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would literally open up his barn doors and close them for different quality of light. The photos took an hour-long exposure to make. And so I always took Jake's 12 dogs for walks all the time. It was really very funny. And then I'd come back an hour later and close the lens of the camera. And also to destroy, after I did that, that still after took me days to do, so that I was within the fate of developing that one negative back at my darkroom at my house in Worcester. And if I screwed up, I screwed up, and it was never meant to be. And if it were, it worked. And I'd go and then reinvent myself, clean mind, to pick up something in Jake's yard, and then give it life and just say, what do you – it's an old, let's say, rocking horse, amazing rocking horse I'm thinking about. I think that might be in the show. Or an old clock, a wooden right. clock, and just say, tell me what you want to be. And it would tell me. It would say, you want to include this and you want to include that. And, hey, you found a box of photos that was thrown away from a nursing home. And relive this person's life, piece it together around that clock time, right? And I have actually Tonto and the Lone Ranger on one side of the clock and then have the occult on the other side. So there's all the, when I say that, I'm meaning little figurines, little toys that I found. And that I would include these and these still lifes. At one point, I was using snow and ice because I was in the wintertime, and I would allow the icicles to melt during that time exposure. So they were a real escape for me and a real cleansing of heart, soul, and mind for things to come.
Wow. I mean, this brings up an interesting question for me. When you look at your photographs, and you take so many photographs, do you know right off when you're looking at it that it's a good photograph, a keeper?
I don't definitively know that. I can only.
Do you have to put them away for a bit and then look at them again?
You know, sometimes I have to put them away for decades. Sometimes I'll shoot something. Of course, you get a negative, right? This analog negative, and I'll feel I missed it. There's something off, and it would anguish me. It'll be so painful that I won't even touch. I want to destroy the negative because I know there's some. Sometimes I will, but they're really bad. And then it sits there for 10 years. And then 10 years later, and I'm looking at my light table in my studio right now, and I'm looking at, I'm not kidding you, a million negatives, all organized in box after box after box. And I'll take out that negative for the first time in 10 years and lay it on the light table and says, okay, did I screw up, or is it okay, or is it good enough? And then part of me will say, you know what? Time heals. Time is really generous to photography. And even though you didn't get that person in the background firmly squared off in the frame, the power of what's happening in the foreground, which was the intention to begin with, go for it. And then I'll make a print and going, hey, pretty damn good. And so, but there was never evidence of it until 10 years later. So that's not highly uncommon. And as I get older, it's becoming more common because now I'm becoming more, maybe the word is sentimental to some degree about the past.
You have to, because you have so much of it.
I have. It just again, I'm walking and talking to you, and I'm going from room to room on my second floor, which is now I'm in the archive room with master prints. That means that each box it says Martha's Vineyard 2004. I'm looking across the room, and it says Martha's Vineyard Landscapes 2010. I'm looking to my left hand side in the room, it says classroom from 2009 to 2014. There's a box here that nobody's ever seen the images from called Portraits 2000 to the present. That someday that I will expose to the wonderful audience out there that's interested in my work, and so on. And so all of these boxes have unique prints in them that are links to a much bigger picture.
Does every series, obviously there's a story about the beginning, is there also a story about why the series ends? And then some series apparently go on forever, like Across the Table.
Well, the thing is, you know, really when you come down to it, the dinner series, which is epic with that big box camera, really did start in the late 70s. I didn't really know it until I was coming to college in 81, 82, where I says, okay, I'm making art now. It's just not a document. I'm actually formulating who's in the picture, how they're looking, where they are in the plate. I'm also a very big film fan. I love movies. And so there's a lot of cinematic lighting in my films. And so I still make these dinner photos. They peaked around 20, I'm going back, I have to look. They peaked around 2007 when I was making them every other day. But then when I start to see boxes say 09, 010, 10 and 11. That meant that I was slowing down where one box can hold 200 negatives. Whereas, so, and again, these, each one takes, you know, it's $8 a shot every time I go click. And these are deliberate images, not multiple images made with a camera that takes one sheet of film. But it morphed into as an addendum to across the table, where I'm still photographing people around tables and celebrating togetherness. And so, and so there's all these links that go back and forth. Nothing is, even the Jacob House stuff is still, again, building blocks, creating a narrative. I mean, it's not completely abandoned from what I do. Maybe the stars, maybe Celestial might be one that goes back to the child in me that might be the most remote out of everything I've ever done. And it's hard to first find that link. But I'm sure, you know, I'm 67 and by the time I'm 87 and if I'm hopefully in good health, I'll go, ah, you know, it's only three photos that I've been making all my life. Let's be real. So
we're out of time, Stephen. And I have so many questions I still need to ask you at some point. My guest tonight has been photographer and teacher, Stephen Dorato. And we're talking about the show that's up at the Fitchburg Art Museum, called Better Together, 4 decades of photographs. It's a blockbuster. It's going to knock your socks off. Stephen, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you again.
Always an honor.
Always. And it's always an honor for me, too. But again, like I said, I have so many questions. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.